Scientists predict this year will be the hottest on record when it ends this week, and the mounting climate crisis is spurring the growth of a new industry, one aimed at capturing planet-warming carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Today, we're looking back on the latest installment of our Climate Solutions series, Reverse Course. Here on Now's Peter O'Dowd and Chris Bentley travelled the country to meet scientists and entrepreneurs pioneering Here and Now's Peter O'Dowd and Chris Bentley travelled the country to meet scientists and entrepreneurs pioneering carbon removal technology. Peter picks it up from here.
Some of their ideas were hard to believe. Channeling our inner Paul Revere, we looked at projects on land and by sea. Here's a memorable moment from Chris Bentley's trip to the Sunrock Quarry in North Carolina, where he watched 50,000 tons of stone get blasted to smithereens.
A rock face the size of an apartment building crumbles like gingerbread, and high fives are in order.
Don't leave me hanging.
Wow!
Mary Yap is saying wow, not only because she just saw 42,000 pounds of explosives go off, but because of what's lying in that pile of rubble, ready to be scooped up. Yap co-founded a company on it called Lithos Carbon.
Yeah, when we first came over and saw our first massive mountains of basalt dust, we knew that this could actually be a meaningful solution.
A solution to climate change that works like this. A chemical reaction happens as air, and especially rain, erodes the minerals in rock. And that reaction takes some of the carbon dioxide currently warming the climate out of the atmosphere. That process is called rock weathering. And it's part of the natural cycle of carbon that has worked for billions of years, long before humans messed things up.
It's really powerful. It removes about 1.1 billion tons of CO2 from the atmosphere every year. And the big question here when you're thinking about carbon removal and, you know, tackling climate change is, what are the big levers that you have to actually make an impact? Not like, you know, little bits here and there, like obviously we should all recycle, these kinds of things, but like, what are the big levers? And this is arguably one of the biggest levers that exists.
Yap's company, Lithos, is trying to answer a deceptively simple question. How can we make that natural process happen faster?
Chris learned that dust from that quarry is going to farms in North Carolina, where it's worked into the soil to absorb carbon. Chris also went to the rugged coast of Maine. A company called Running Tide is working on a biomass project.
Or, put more simply, sinking wood to the bottom of the ocean. Here's Running Tide's senior engineer, Andrew Thompson.
So as that wood is growing on land through photosynthesis, it's trapping CO2 away into its cellulose. But when that tree falls over, dies, and rots, all of that carbon goes right back in the atmosphere, and that's the natural carbon cycle. What we're doing is we're intervening, grabbing that wood before it rots and sinking it down into the deep ocean where that carbon is sequestered and locked away in the ocean.
That's waste wood that would otherwise be burnt or left to rot. And the company is accounting for the carbon emissions of shipping it out to sea. And yes, it's actually happening. In controlled experiments off the coast of Iceland, Running Tide says it's already sequestered at least 17,000 tons of carbon.
One, two, three.
Here in Portland, they're building high-tech buoys to test how they might be able to sink not just wood, but fast-growing algae. But it all started here at Portland's Fish Pier, out of the stall that founder Marty Odlin used to fish out of. Odlin was an engineer for the family business. Now, he says, they're fishing for carbon.
So it's like literally the same tools we used to fix the boats with. Now we're developing carbon removal systems with them. You know, it's fishing, so by any means necessary to go get the job done, so we'll do whatever it takes.
And finally, vacuuming carbon straight out of the air. In November, I was in California's Central Valley, where a company called Heirloom just cut the ribbon on the country's first ever commercial-scale direct air capture plant. Inside an open-air warehouse, robots are busy inspecting stacks of trays that tower 40 feet above the ground. The trays look like cookie sheets, and each one is covered with a powdery substance. That powder is limestone that naturally binds to carbon in the atmosphere as the breeze moves through the building.
This is a blueprint. This is a template of what we need to be building across the world.
Heirloom CEO Shashank Samala says after 3 days, the robots will move the trays into a kiln where a blast of heat separates the carbon from the limestone. All of it is powered by renewable energy.
Just like we have solar farms and wind farms, we want carbon farms sucking up CO2 from the air.
What can you do here? How much?
Yeah, humans emit every day 100 million tons of CO2 into the air. Every day, every single day.
So you need to build like...
Thousands of these things.
Thousands of these things.
100%. You know, these facilities need to be 1,000 times larger, and we need to build thousands of those across the world.
A few big spenders agree. To offset its emissions, Microsoft announced in September that it would buy 315,000 metric tons of Heirloom's captured carbon. There's also a lot of money from the government. The Biden administration is investing $1.2 billion in Heirloom and other companies to build direct air capture hubs in Louisiana and Texas. But what do you do with all the carbon once it's separated and stored? It's an ironic twist that some oil companies use CO2 to push more fossil fuels out of the ground. Samala promises that won't happen here.
All the CO2 we capture from the air is going to be permanently sequestered.
Take a moment now and guess where. Ready?
In this case, concrete.
Concrete? Those were highlights from our series, Reverse Course. And during several months of reporting, Chris Bentley and I learned a lot about these climate tech businesses that we just couldn't fit into our stories. So Chris is going to join me now to open up the old reporter's notebook. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Good. Thanks. So I think there is a moment when you're reporting a series like this, when you're like, everything is making sense to me right now. And I had that moment when the CEO of Heirloom was like, human beings across the globe emit 100 million tons of CO2 into the air every single day. And then you have these plants that are trying to remove that carbon, and they're getting 1,000 tons of CO2 in a year. And that really blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean, 1,000 tons a year is 1,000 more than was happening a couple of years ago, but it is an absolute drop in the bucket. But I think it's crucial to remember that even though this technology is way further advanced than I realized actually before we started reporting this, it's only ever going to really be something that is in addition to switching to renewable energy or electrifying our transportation network. So this is something that's supposed to be additional or kind of around the edges. And that's even if it scales up way bigger than it is now.
Yeah. And Chris, another thing I know that we both found in our reporting but didn't really get into it in these stories is the fact that the economic model here is really brand new. The White House, the federal government's investing tons, billions of dollars into this type of technology. And from conversations I had with people, it's almost considered to be seed money, right? It proves to other companies, to companies like Microsoft, that they could risk the investment of spending millions of their own dollars buying carbon credits from a company that frankly no one had heard of, you know, just a couple of years ago. I think that's really worth getting into.
Right. And that's what these companies are selling, carbon removal purchases, which are like credits. They're saying, hey, Microsoft or whomever, if you want to help remove carbon from the atmosphere, you can pay us. And we've got this way that we can prove we're doing it. And so here's how much carbon we removed from the atmosphere on your behalf. And you can put that on your books.
Mm. And that's easy to measure, right?
Well, to a certain extent, I mean, but the devil's in the details, as they say. So you got to make sure that you're not emitting more carbon in the process of taking it out than you're actually taking out. And you got to prove that you took it all out. It can't be sort of fuzzy math like, oh, this works in theory. It's got to be provable in the field.
Well, exactly. Carbon credits and offsets, they've always been controversial. I spoke with Stanford professor Mark Jacobson, who does not like these types of projects. He says that the companies are not accounting for the fact that all of the renewable energy they're using to remove carbon from the air, whatever way they do it, could have been used to replace fossil fuel plants. Here's Mark Jacobson.
None of that's being accounted for. The health costs of not using renewable energy to replace fossil plants, or the higher CO2 reductions you'd get by replacing a fossil plant. So the accounting, the offsetting is just bogus in my mind.
Which makes me think, Chris, like this is all so new. You know, some of these companies are literally brand new. They're getting lots of money. What if we don't fully understand the economic models yet, right? It's so early.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. These are startups. Like they feel like it. When you go to these offices, it sort of feels like a tech startup. And it is. I mean, these are engineers that are solving a really complicated engineering problem. And they're getting their money from tech companies, from capitalists who have money to spend and whose hearts are probably in the right place, but who kind of have money to throw around. And so that's necessary to get some of this science to the point that we can see if it will have a meaningful impact on a global scale. But there's sort of inevitably a risk there that once you start to throw a lot of money into a sector, there's sort of an incentive to cut corners. Now, I don't want to sound like too pessimistic about this. I think that there's also probably more incentives for them to do the right thing and rigorously prove that they're actually removing this carbon. The sense I got from all these people is certainly that they're motivated first and foremost by doing good for the climate. It comes to actually scaling it up to a point when it has a global impact, that's where the trick is. And we'll have to see what happens. This is a story that, like most climate stories, is going to keep unfurling over the next couple decades. And we're really just at the very beginning.
And speaking of doing the right thing, as we were out around the country reporting these stories all year, getting on boats and airplanes, helicopters, you know, you name it, rental cars, that sort of thing. Like we expended a lot of carbon into the atmosphere doing these types of stories. And we had a little self-reflection on that and realized that maybe there's more reporting to be done on decarbonizing the transportation sector because it's just so unavoidable. Yep. So hopefully we'll be doing more work on that soon.
That's right. So stay tuned.
Here now is Chris Bentley. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.